Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to a mini episode of Cinematic Universe. I'm Joe Cunningham, and joining me to help bridge the gap between our Batman Forever and Incredibles 2 podcasts are
Seb Patrick
and Reese Williamson.
Reese, you're back for another mini episode.
Another late dropout, so I'm here.
Another mini episode where there isn't that much news to talk about, but I'm sure we'll bang on for an hour about nothing.
Bring it on.
Always good.
No other plans.
Well, I'd do, because we've got to fill a bit of time this week, because there's not much news. We've got some stuff to talk about, don't worry, listeners. But there's also a question that I think is on everyone's lips, and I thought that I should probably ask that question, as I do on the main episodes, but on the mini episodes instead. So, Reese, Seb, help me to try and make sense of something that I don't understand. Is it coming home? Is it?
No.
If we're doing this crossover, does this mean I get to talk about Roy the Rovers?
You could talk about whatever you want, Seb. we are recording this on Thursday, so before potentially finding out that it's not coming home, or it might still be. But we, Reese, you've been watching the football.
I have.
We're all very excited. If we've got any American listeners or non-English listeners, we're very excited. We're kind of just floating around on a cloud of Badil and Skinner this week. And it's glorious. It's filling the gap of there being A, no comic book movie news, and B, no Ant-Man and the Wasp, which is being released in the US right now, and I'm not happy about it.
Yes, but Joe, do you know why it's not been released here?
Because it's coming home.
So you can't have both things.
But also, Joe, you can't complain too much because you've seen Incredibles 2.
I have seen Incredibles 2.
Ooh, twist.
Yeah, I went to a Cineworld Unlimited secret screening a couple of weeks ago, and we had no idea what the film was going to be. I've been to the secret screenings a couple of times before. The last one I went to was full of nerds who were hoping it was going to be Ready Player One, when it wasn't, and it was in fact Love, Simon, a film that is far superior to Ready Player One. Half of the audience walked out. So that's the kind of vibe you get there, is like there's half of the people that are turning up hoping for something, and the other half is turning up just, hey, give me a movie. And I went to this and I was convinced it would be Tag. I thought the dates made sense for Tag. The crazy wish was Incredibles 2, but it's never the one that you're thinking, oh, that's the one that it would be great if it was. And then we walked in and there was a sign on the door that said, epilepsy warning. And I'd been reading online that week that Disney had to belatedly add epilepsy warnings. Anyway, then I got inside and there was a flickering light on the wall, literally like a light that was just flickering on and off for 20 minutes before the film started. And I was like, I started to doubt myself. I was like, oh, maybe they've put that up just because they've got a faulty light inside. And then the Pixar logo came up, or the BBSE certificate screen for Incredibles 2. I was delighted, but I won't tell you too much what I thought about it, other than it's good, and we'll save it for the episode next week.
I'll give you a little industry trivia. I work in the cinema, and so I happen to know that there is another film, I use film quite loosely, that is currently in theatres that also has an epilepsy warning, just one other, and it's the Muse concert film, Muse Drones World Tour. So it could, you know, you might dodge a bullet there, unless you're a massive Muse fan. I don't know.
No, I would have walked out.
Wouldn't that be such a great secret cinema world screening to do? Just like, yeah, just a concert film.
Just a Muse concert film.
Anyway.
Yeah. So yeah, Incredibles 2 next week. For this week, though, we just moan about still not having Incredibles 2 or Ant-Man and the Wasp in cinemas in the UK. But if it comes home, it'll all be worth it. And guys, I'm considering that if England win the World Cup, I'm going to change my name from Joseph Cunningham to Joe It's Coming Home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Yeah. Do we like
that,
it?
That has been recorded now.
Permanently?
There's no going back.
Do you mean your name or your Twitter name? Because that's very doable, and that's
my Twitter name may have already changed to that by the time that, and then changed back again after we've after we lose to Sweden. Normally I would believe that, but this time, you guys, it's different.
They'll probably lose to Croatia in the semi-finals. That's probably what's going to happen. That's, right?
I mean, I think the irony option is losing to Sweden after what happened with Colombia, but the realistic option is lose to Croatia in the semi-final.
No, we're gonna... The ball's gonna bounce off the back of Harry Kane's head in the final, and we're gonna beat Brazil 1-0 after extra time.
I don't think that's impossible, but I don't think it's likely.
There would be a great irony in, you know, at a time when, you know, Russia is completely interfering with the running of this country and is poisoning people on British soil, that England would then go and win a World Cup in Russia, meaning that forever we would actually have to associate Russia with good and positive things rather than the fact that they are completely, you know, tearing the world up at the moment.
Yeah, their players don't seem to tire in extra time. It's
weird, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, strange.
Good energy bars there. Must be the energy bars.
Let's talk about some of the comic book movie and TV news that we do have. And because James isn't here, we can talk about it. I mean, Seb, I know it annoys you as well, but it annoys James more. We've got some more casting for the Watchmen series, Damon Lindelof's HBO Watchmen series, which has been filming already. I think most notably of the names that have been announced this week, Jeremy Irons has joined the cast. Also joining the cast are Tom Meissen, who I think to me is best known. He played Ichabod Crane in the recent Sleepy Hollow TV series. And also it's, I think I butchered his name last time we talked about him on the podcast, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, who is due to play Black Manta in Aquaman next week, and later this year. And
that's taken us by surprise.
Yeah. They've moved it forward.
Aquaman cares not for whether it's coming home.
Yeah, the one film that the box office probably wouldn't be affected by the World Cup. the cast is kind of like slowly taking shape. An actress called Sarah Vickers, who I'm less familiar with, but I believe is a British actress who stars in Endeavour, the Inspector Morse prequel. She's been cast in it as well. And so it's taking shape. And I think the most interesting one is Jeremy Irons. Jeremy Irons is obviously a big name actor, and it feels a little bit to me like casting Anthony Hopkins
in Westworld.
Mm-hmm. This is another big, like a really big kind of HBO production that I'm sure they are hoping is going to be their next Game of Thrones, Westworld.
Does that mean that Anthony Hopkins to Transformers The Last Knight is Jeremy Irons to the Justice League stuff? Is that the equivalent?
I mean, that's entirely possible. Two actors that aren't are not afraid to cash a check in their in the later years. But the rumor that I saw out there, which I found interesting, was that Jeremy Irons could be playing an older Ozymandias. We didn't talk about this when it was reported a couple of weeks ago, but there were set photos that leaked, and it seems like this Watchmen series is set in kind of years on from the events of Watchmen, where kind of the public didn't really buy into what was happening, or didn't. They were kind of hoodwinked, I guess. The letter didn't reveal anything, and they just kind of believe Ozymandias's version of events. And Jeremy Irons could be Ozymandias. I think, Seb, I think you would probably admit, as much as you are not on board with this series, the idea of Jeremy Irons as an older Ozymandias is intriguing.
Yeah, but as I may even have said before, I think if you're going to cast an older Ozymandias, why is it not Jude Law? But no, that's...
Not old enough.
Well, makeup. I like Jeremy Irons, but I'm just not interested, Joe. I'm sorry.
Reese, you're interested, right?
I'm interested. Yes. I'm very interested because Lost and The Leftovers are top five favorite TV shows ever, probably. And this is Lindelof, and this is a big HBO budget, and this is superheroes, and I'm ready. Bring it on! Yeah. I would binge watch this show tomorrow. I'm eager for it. And if it's terrible and it shits all over Watchmen, I can just go and read Watchmen again, and that's just what it is, and I can enjoy it for Watchmen.
Yeah, I reiterate what I said on the podcast last time. If this is shit, and if any Watchmen related thing is not very good, it kind of doesn't matter, because that doesn't tarnish the reputation of Watchmen. Watchmen still remains and is still was it Beyond Watchmen the comic and the Snyder film, that neither of those have dented the legacy of Watchmen. It's still considered like one of the greatest graphic novels, one of the greatest pieces of comic book storytelling of all time. The only thing that I can see tarnishing the legacy of Watchmen at all is this being quite good, and this kind of being considered in some way canonical. That's the only thing that I can see detracting. And
I wonder whether it's not dramatic, but around about between 3 and 5 years, I think, difference in age between me and Joe and Seb and James maybe goes toward explaining the Watchmen thing, which is that I don't know what image I had of Watchmen, the original comic, before the kind of awareness of the film and even the production of the film kind of came in. So I wonder whether just that extra, let's say, 5 years and you know, a heavier comics fan, especially versus you, Joe, from Seven James, it just solidifies what that original comic is without anything else existing. And then it was really it was the movie adaptation that then sort of, that's been the start of all these various things.
And I guess through my teenage years, they were just always making Alan Moore comic adaptations. And Watchmen was just another one. And I knew it was the big one with the reputation. And I had read the graphic novel before that movie came out. It didn't really bother me, because it was just a fact that they made these Alan Moore comics and they made them into movies.
But that doesn't change the fact that anything Watchmen related that isn't the original 12 issue Watchmen series is not good or interesting.
No, but what it does is it just sort of changes.
This is your
memory of its reputation. Right.
Because do you not think Watchmen still very much holds up if you read it? And everything that Watchmen is doing, it still does. I mean, be clear, I'm not, especially because I don't want to get into it again. I'm in no way getting into the moral argument over this. Let's consider that one done and dusted.
Sure.
But the reason I find this difficult to get interested in, as I've said before, is just from a creative point of view, no matter who's doing it, I just don't find the premise of what happens after Watchmen in any way interesting because it's not what Watchmen is about, and it's not what Watchmen's world was set up to do.
But this isn't Watchmen. That's what I got. For me, this is almost
well, it
like,
is Watchmen because it's called Watchmen.
No, but it's
and
but
it's and it's set
but it's
that...
not Watchmen. It's a sequel to Watchmen. It's like it's Aliens to Alien. You are putting a movie in the same world, and there are connections between the two. But I mean, for me, it just seems like it's the setup of a kind of. Of a different kind of world, and then let's see
why is it Watchmen? It? If you said Damon Lindelof is doing a superhero styled show for HBO about
why is it Westworld? Why is it Westworld? Because if you did that story,
you would be sued by. If you did that story and filed the serial numbers off, you'd be sued by Michael Crichton's estate.
No, I mean, Michael Crichton did it to himself enough times, so I think it would be a bit rich.
I know what you're saying is the answer to that question is because it's a recognisable name that will draw people in.
Because money.
If it was an unfamiliar name.
Yeah, this isn't getting made without the Watchmen name on it. And who knows? And you know what? Probably it's probably not getting Damon Lindelof's attention without the Watchmen name on it.
Yeah, true. But I don't think that makes it worth doing as Watchmen. I just think because it's not Watchmen is what it comes back to. It can be as good as it might turn out to be. This is why, and again, in the example that I brought up when we've talked about it before, Pax Americana, the Grant Morrison thing, was a riff on Watchmen, but it wasn't calling itself Watchmen.
Do we know what this show is called? Yeah, here's a question.
Well, it's just being referred to as Damon Lindelof's Watchmen TV.
Would you be happy if this show ended up being called Not Watchmen? Would you be happy with that? Would that be all right with you?
But that would make even less sense because then it's, you know.
So it's the Watchmen logo. It's everything. It's just like, but a Comic Sans word not just to the top left corner of it. And that's the title. That's the logo.
I'm just being reminded now of the fact that years ago, when before Watchmen was first coming out, I did a photoshopped gag that was DC's new edition of Watchmen, which was called After Before Watchmen.
I think we can move on from that.
Look, I hope you guys find something to enjoy in it.
Do you think there's any scenario where you watch it, or it's not going to happen for you?
Let's see how it makes its way to these shores, and if it's on Amazon Prime or Netflix.
No, it will be on Sky
Atlantic. Yeah.
Oh well, I don't have Sky, so I will not have enough of an invested interest to find other ways to watch it.
Patreon backers,
Sky Go. I could watch it on my tablet, I suppose.
I know a way that we could get that Damon Lindelof could get Seb to watch.
Go on.
You cast in that kind of world, you cast John Hamm as a Superman-esque figure.
Ooh. But then you might as well be doing Astro City. See, this is the thing. If it was if they went to Kurt Busiek and said, we want to do this take on a superhero world, and John Hamm as Samaritan in an Astro City TV series, yes, please. John Hamm as Supreme in a Supreme TV series. There's an Alan Moore property that there's no moral quandary over doing because Rob Liefeld would say, yes, please give me money.
Anyway, Seb, it's fine. John Hamm's not going to be in it. If you want to see John Hamm, you can go see Tag. We'll move on now to... I don't know. Could they play The Incredibles 2 instead? we'll move on now to M. Night Shyamalan's Glass, which got its... first poster. It's been out there for over a week now. We had enough news on the last main episode that we decided not to talk about it because I thought, there'll probably be a trailer out soon. there hasn't been yet, so let's talk about the poster, which is it's split into three colours. There's a purple bit for Mr. Glass. There is a green bit for Mr. Willis, and there is a yellow bit for Mr. Split. It's a really cool poster, you guys. So you see all three of them sat down. It looks like Mr. Glass is in almost like medical garb, like he's still in kind of like some kind of asylum for the criminally insane. Bruce Willis's character is in chains. His hands are chained to the ground. Obviously, that's not the that's not the situation we left him in at the end of, well, I was going to say Unbreakable, at the end of Split, when we saw him, he was just out and about in public. And then it's tougher to get the vibe from James McAvoy's character. It looks like he's just in some gym jams, maybe? I don't know, but he's obviously got multiple personalities, so that could be one of various characters. But then there's the reflection of them all in the floor, and Mr. Glass is in his like classic long leather coat. Bruce Willis is in his big old anorak, and James McAvoy is in his like beast persona from the end of Split, where he is all really pumped and ripped and just wearing some yellow pants from the waist down. And their tagline is...
Does he physically transform in this as someone who's not seen Split?
Spoilers for Glass, if you don't already... So for Split, if you haven't already seen it, but it's been out long enough now, I think. Yes. Not outrageously, but they keep talking about this like final persona that hasn't come out yet, that's the beast that all of the other Split personalities are terrified of. And he kind of becomes like, yeah, big and muscular and veiny and insanely strong and pretty much just wants to eat Anya Taylor-Joy, it seems like. So yeah, he's at, like, and that's why it makes sense that, I don't know, you feel like this might be a Silence of the Lambs riff where the main villain is McAvoy and that Willis comes to Jackson for help. Which would be pretty cool. Just those three above the title, but Anya Taylor-Joy is in this as well. This poster makes me feel confident about the movie. It looks that the poster is cool. I like what it's doing. And I'm just enjoying the stage of his career that M. Night Shyamalan is in right now. He's on the comeback curve, and for all of the terrible movies that he made in the middle of his career, and he made like three or four of them, he made, in the early 2000s, he was like one of the like auteurs of American mainstream cinema. He was phenomenal. The Sixth Sense is amazing. Unbreakable's really great. Signs is good for the majority of its runtime. The Village has its moments.
Don't you just think though that, like, you know, Unbreakable was just this kind of perfect self-contained story, and I don't think it's fair to M. Night Shyamalan for them to go ahead and make a new thing kind of set in the same universe. And it's like, why don't they just do something with new characters rather than like dredging up his characters against his wishes?
Are you arguing against yourself, Seb?
Doesn't work, Seb, because he made all three. You wouldn't be saying that about After Watchmen if Alan Moore was the showrunner, would you? Would you?
Yeah, yes, Reese, that was the joke. I know that it's him doing it. That was the joke. It was a little joke.
What if it wasn't? Would you still be excited? I probably wouldn't be
That's
excited.
That's a good question.
I probably wouldn't be as excited for it because I'm
What if it was Damon Lindelof doing it?
Oh, yeah, fuck
yeah. Yeah, sure.
I mean, not directing. I'd give him a shot. I'd give him a shot. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Shyamalan does now that he's kind of on his kind of B-movie horror stretch of his career.
But do you think that Shyamalan has done enough good things to make you think that this is going to be another one of those? Or isn't it true that it's just two, isn't it? It's like two good ones, and then 3 ago was I don't know, was a bad one, isn't it?
Yeah, but it feels like it feels like there has been a perspective shift with him.
Okay.
Because after... I could talk about M. Night Shyamalan's career for literally hours. But After Earth feels like a director trying to play nice with Hollywood again and going, yeah, I'll turn up, I'll make the film you want me to make. It's a vehicle that Will Smith can hand over the action reins to Jaden. Sure, yeah, I'll turn up, I'll do it, that's fine. Then he goes off and makes his little lower budget horror movie that's actually kind of pretty cool and gnarly and really suspenseful and imaginative and has great performances and kind of reminds you of all of the things that you liked about M. Night Shyamalan in the first place. And then he gets a bit of a budget again, and Split is, again, really effective B-movie horror. This is not only am I looking forward to it, this is the movie that I am glad he's making now. It feels like he's re-earned his stripes, and now he gets a chance to, kind of re-attack the superhero genre in a time where it's really ripe for doing so. Bring a bit of horror into it at the same time.
But it could be bad.
but every movie could.
I guess I'm not quite as confident as you are. But, hope springs eternal.
For me, it's always been... He's never lacked the filmmaking talent, but he's been a victim of his own hype, and I don't think he is that anymore. I'm excited, you guys. So that's Glass, coming January 18th.
Soon.
Not even that far away. A couple of points very quickly until we move on to Comics Corner. James Wan is going to be directing the Swamp Thing pilot, Seb. We knew he was producing
that's
it.
That's such a weird sentence. That's just such a weird sentence.
Just another bloody Alan Moore project that they've decided to take.
Apparently he's directing it alongside Darren Serafian, who is a director with... I think he's best known for his work on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
So he's a hot talent. Hot recent talent.
More recently, he directed a lot of the episodes of Hemlock Grove for Eli Roth, and I interviewed him on the set of Hemlock Grove.
So we can't really trust your opinion on this. You will be biased. You've met the guy.
Oh, no, he seemed perfectly pleasant. But Hemlock Grove was the kind of show that even though I'd flown to Canada and watched an episode being filmed, that episode was the penultimate episode of the season, and 1.5 episodes into the season, I went, I am never going to make it to watch what I saw being filmed. Turned it off and never watched it again. So James Wan's directing alongside Serafian, and this DC Universe stuff, they are spending a lot of their money up front. Even before it comes, before any of the series debut on the platform, and apparently, Seb, DC are rumored to be considering Kelsey Grammer for a role in Doom Patrol.
You'd have to assume he'd be, ironically,
Nihil. Could he have been Swamp Thing?
Sorry,
I was saying, could he have been Swamp Thing?
Oh, no, I was just thinking that he'd be Professor Niles, which would be really funny because...
Which would be delightful.
That is his name, isn't it? In Doom Patrol. Professor Niles? Oh. Niles Calder, that's it. The Chief, not the Professor. Dr. Niles Calder, known as the Chief. So if Kelsey Grammer would be a fantastic fit for that character, actually.
And anyone who's slightly right-wing nut would be the perfect fit for a universe that has been established by Zack Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm quite torn, though. I'm quite torn on this DC Universe thing, if that's what we're calling it. Is that what it's called? DC?
That's the name of it, I think.
Horrible. Anyway, but fine. Because I bought an iPad like 9 months ago almost exclusively to get the Marvel Unlimited app on it and to be reading all the Marvel shit from the last 10 years that I sort of missed out on. And that's what I've done, and I've loved it. It's amazing. But I would love a DC equivalent. And, the sort of talk in the early days. No, but it's going to be something in between. Dependent on what that is, I wonder whether, and how much the whole service is, I wonder whether still... It might appeal to Reese comic book reader, or Reese would love to sort of stream some DC comics.
It sounds like the kind of thing, because it sounds like what they're doing is that the comics content will be relatively small selection and it'll be rotating, but it sounds like they'll be selecting topical things to put up. It sounds to me that for someone like you, Reese, a lot of the stuff that's on there will be stuff you will likely have already read. I hope that they put some gems and stuff on there. I mean, even as someone who's read a lot of DC comics, there's also a lot of DC comics that I haven't read, and I would absolutely love a Marvel Unlimited style service. I would get so much more out of it than I do out of Marvel Unlimited, which I, still do find very useful and great stuff to dig into on there. Somebody made the point on Twitter, it may have been friend Andrew Hickey, who said that the reason why DC probably wouldn't do that is that DC are much better at selling books of their stuff. Hmm. They keep stuff in print more, or rather they put stuff in print more. Actually, no, keeping it in print is a problem. They publish more in the way of backlist stuff, archive editions, collections of stuff, reissues of collections of stuff, and their stuff sells so much better in bookshops than Marvel's does. Marvel's trade... the entirety of Marvel's trade organization is shoddy. It's a mess. And actually, I think that's why, you know, speaking as someone who's worked on one of them for several years, those subscription books do so well for Marvel because they're one of the best ways to actually get collected trade editions of Marvel books, which isn't the case for DC. Now, DC do have a problem with some of it, which is firstly, they have an annoying habit of putting out an edition of something and then it going out of print very quickly before you've had a chance to get all of them. So I still don't have a complete run of Hitman trades. I remember buying the Starman hardcovers, but then I was missing them because they were coming out every 6 months and I was getting them at the end of the year for birthdays and Christmas. And by the time I'd missed one of them and got the next one, the previous one, you already couldn't get hold of for love nor money, and now they're completely out of print. There's things like that where they sometimes don't keep stuff in print as much as they should. There's also a lot of stuff, and again, I think DC are better than Marvel for this, of a complete kind of self-contained run of something from start to finish, you know, a kind of a 40, 50, 60 issue run largely by the same creative team or based around the same character, you know, that's a series that began and ended at a certain point. There feels to me like there's more of that stuff sitting in DC's archives that if you're paying a subscription for something, you go, oh, fantastic, you know, I can read all 40, 50 issues of the Roger Stern Starman, or I can read Dan Jurgens' Booster Gold from the 80s and that kind of thing. You know, these blocks of runs that you don't tend to find in books, but that it would be really nice to dig into. So I would love that, but I think that stuff, there isn't enough of it, because what DC would see as what people would want to pay money for is the big prestige stuff, and the big prestige stuff is out there. It's on Comixology, it's in bookshops. You know, I mean, DC's archive on Comixology is so much better than Marvel's, probably because they don't have Marvel Unlimited. So I'd love it. I can see why they're not doing it. I hope they change their minds. I hope that what they do on there in terms of comics does well and inspires them to put more on. But we'll see.
I mean, I do love... I mean, imagine if what we get to is a sort of like a MUBI, M-U-B-I, but for DC comics. Wouldn't that be great? Like, it's curated and it's sort of... It rotates, but at any point you can sort of log in and you just get, you know, 30 kind of great, you know, full trades.
Yeah, I mean, speaking as someone who's read most of the major stuff, I'd like it if it contained more obscure stuff or stuff that's harder to get hold of. I feel like probably, this idea, as I say, for people, maybe even not quite like you, Reese, but maybe more like Joe, I think there's real potential there to say, here's the stuff you should be reading. But then the issue with that is I feel like that curated thing, that can narrow that field. It's like there's a generally accepted canon, and actually there's a lot more stuff beyond that that's worth digging into, but that doesn't get spotlighted in the same way. You know, how many times can someone tell you that you should read Batman Year One and Watchmen and V for Vendetta? You know,
I just wonder whether there's going to be enough on this platform to justify the outlay. Because
I don't think there'll either be enough comics on its own to justify paying for it for comics, or good TV to justify paying for it for TV.
Well, so, apparently, on top of the new film, so obviously, I think the main parallel you can make is with CBS All Access, which kind of launched with its big marquee thing is Star Trek Discovery. There's no denying that. The Good Fight, the Good Wife spin-off, was the other one. And then the thought is that you get people in with that and they stay for the back catalogues of all of your CBS shows that you've got on there. So you've got kind of all your old episodes of Big Bang Theory, or, you know, I don't know, whatever all your other CBS shows are that people are coming to watch. Now, the DC Mentalist Universe is going to have some... It's going to have some of the old films. It's going to have the Batman films, the Superman films. It's going to have Batman the Animated Series. It's going to have Lois and Clark and Wonder Woman.
I was wondering about things like Lois and Clark, because I was looking at the banner thing that they've got on the website, and there's actually more than I thought in terms of, they've got an image of Wonder Woman Wonder Woman 70s, Constantine's on the Justice League cartoon. I couldn't see Lois and Clark's. So that's
that stuff isn't. That stuff is not. It's gonna. It has to be the exclusive new content. That is what will drive the success of this service, right? So that's
yeah, but. Well, that's what will drive sign-ups, but then you've got to retain those people. So I might have signed up for Netflix in the first place because I wanted to see such and such a show, but now I know that any time I log into Netflix, there's probably something on there that I'm going to watch or that I'm going to want to watch. It seems like this is it's. I think the animation is going to on its own kind of secure somewhat of a fan base. And it will be, yeah. I think it might actually come down to what they're able to do with the comics and how, and maybe even just the functionality of the app. But you know, DC are owned by an enormous company; they can probably afford to weather a loss-making service for a while if it builds into what they're hoping it builds into.
I wonder why they don't.
Point actually, when you look on the site where it says about the films, it says relive the DC films that made you a fan with a rotating library of hits, and it's like even. Even the stuff where it's like, you know, these Warner Brothers films, there's obviously licensing issues where they can't just permanently have the rights to have the Superman movie or the Tim Burton Batman movie up there.
Mm.
But it's a big choice. I mean, like, one wonders whether, because it's Warner's, you know, there would have been a decision at some point to have it be a DC thing as opposed to a Warner's thing, right? Because if you've got all, you've got the Warner's library behind you, you've got all the Warner's money that's paying for it all. You know, is there not some alternate reality where it's a Warner's service with a load of DC stuff that appeals to it, kind of like Netflix is, right? Where you have the Marvel stuff that's on Netflix, but there's other stuff there as well.
Yeah, because I mean, the difference is if I logged onto Netflix and got two episodes into the newest season of Luke Cage and was like, oh, I'm not really feeling this, I can turn it off and I can watch the new series of Glow or the new series of Queer Eye or all of the Fast and Furious films that have just been added last week. If I'm logging into DC Universe and I get two episodes into Titans and don't like it, the rest of the stuff has to be pretty compelling for me to want to stick around.
Mm. Interesting. Do we have a date on that?
Well, it's not going to be. I was going to say this is all moot for us anyway because it's not launching in the UK, at least not to begin with. It's US.
Yeah, but I would assume that DC will do a similar thing that CBS All Access did with Star Trek Discovery, which is to find another host for that.
Oh, I'm sure they will. Yeah, the content will get out there in other ways, but the service. Well, and you know, it's a shame because I would be interested in exploring the service. But it looks like, to answer your actual question, Reece, it looks like it's August for the beta, and then later in the year for a kind of full setup. But
and do they have? Is there pricing yet? At least in dollars, is that out there?
I don't think so. No. I don't think they'll announce price until they fully announce the content.
Sure. Anything over 10 and this is done, right? No. It has to come in under 10, surely.
Disney Life is £5, and I think that's the benchmark for something like this because it's not Netflix, it's not Amazon. It doesn't have that range of content. I don't think you can justify... I'm not sure you could even justify 10.
Does it have Moana?
Does Disney Life?
Yeah.
Almost certainly.
That's all that matters.
What's Marvel Unlimited? 8? Netflix in the UK is 10? I wonder...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra.
Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
CBS, do we know what CBS All Access is in the US?
I think it might be $8.99, but I've also pulled that out of my bum.
That's the number, right? I think, Seb, it's not five, it's more like $8 or $9, probably, for this. Anyway, who knows? And it won't come here anyway, but I'm, you know, curious. Because they know, because this play is for the, it's for the nerds, right? And so they, their players will basically make, will give enough stuff that these guys need so that we can charge more for it. You know, that's how it starts. It's not a mainstream product at the beginning. It's appealing to how CBS appealed to the Star Trek nerds. Those nerds, they need to see Discovery, so you can charge more for that service.
Yeah.
It's cheeky.
But I look at the services in this country. I mean, I'm a subscriber to Netflix and Amazon Prime, and Star Trek Discovery just dropped in my lap, which was amazing. And I was scrolling through Amazon Prime the other day. I had no idea Cloak and Dagger is going up on there. And I was like, well, that's a show that probably could quite easily have passed me by. It's right there. I can at least give the pilot a go, and I probably will. Black Lightning just turned up on Netflix, didn't it? But that's what DC Universe will have to compete with in the US as well. To a lesser extent, because they have more services than we do. But it has to compete against people are not going to pay for unlimited services. They're going to pay for the ones that are either perfect for them or have just enough to keep that amount of money being direct debited out every month.
But
that people forget.
No, sure.
Forget you've subscribed.
But it's so weird. It's such a different world that we a different world that we now live in versus like 3 years ago, where most people probably just had a Netflix subscription, maybe a Spotify, and now it just feels like it's a whole different ballgame. Where
do you remember when Netflix in the US announced that they were splitting up the streaming and DVD services, and the outcry was enormous. Like, oh my, you don't understand what you're doing with your service, Netflix. You fundamentally misunderstand what customers want. Yeah, I think we need to understand as like consumers that occasionally we will be right about this kind of stuff. But it's like every time Twitter does some kind of major redesign and 6 months later, after we've all bitched and moaned, we go, actually, do you know, it's really nice not having to try and fit into 140 characters. Although they are the worst in a lot of other ways. Speaking of Netflix, Netflix snapped up the rights to Lucifer. They are going to just put together a 2-episode season finale to tie up that show. I don't think we need to talk about it. It's just kind of nice for the fans that liked that show, and that's the thing that can now like happen to lots of shows these days, that they can kind of find a way through to like ending the story for their fans more often than not.
Or if you're being cynical and you're tying into our previous conversation, it's that way that Netflix is just looking at, you know, smaller and smaller niches. Then there'll be some metric that says X amount of Lucifer fans aren't Netflix subscribers. What's the sort of least amount of money we can spend on more Lucifer to get people sign up to Netflix?
And that's kind of nakedly been Netflix's approach to original content since they started. I mean, seems very badly dated now, but to begin with, Netflix said, do you know what our algorithm says that people like? It says that they like political shows and they like Kevin Spacey films. So let's put those two things together. Hey, it's Kevin Spacey in a political TV show. And they also like David Fincher films, so we'll get him to direct. And then they paid all of the money to make sure that it happened. And it's working for them. They're like worth more than Apple now. It's crazy. Comics Corner, you guys, before we...
just before, before we go on to Comics up, Corner, Moana is not on Disney.
Oh, she's made way. Moana made way.
So what is on and what isn't on Disney Live? Is it just random?
No, we're not. We don't need to get into the catalog of Disney Live right now.
It we're seems to on. Be pretty much everything except Moana.
It's fine, you guys. She made way.
Is there like a separate Moana streaming service that's just Moana and it's the same price, but it's just Moana Live?
I think Moana might be on Netflix. Hey, you guys, watch Moana for God's sake.
It's the best.
Well, I would,
it's
but it's not on Disney Live.
Go off. I want all of you to go off. I want you to consider the coconuts, and I want you to watch Moana tonight. It's not on Netflix either. Hey, be cool like me. Own the Blu-ray. Also, last year I literally rewrote the entire first chorus and verse of Moana to fit in with Black Panther. It's T'Challa, make way, make way.
No, we don't need to hear it. I believe you did it. We don't need to hear it. It's fine.
I love how, we're not getting into the intricacies of the Disney Live catalogue, but I can get into songs from Moana.
Yeah, I can always
Black Panther.
I can always sing for the podcast, guys. It's fine.
I feel like the time is now to do some sort of a Moana and It's Coming Home mashup, Joe, and that is your job. It's your job to do that. Not live, but you can prepare it.
The cogs are turning, Reese.
He's thinking about it. He's thinking about it. Can I go viral? Can I be the next Homeward Bound clip on Twitter? He's thinking about it. That's the best one, by the way. That is the best one.
Comics Corner, you guys. Batman 50 was released last week, and you guys are going to briefly talk about it because it's kind of a... probably one of the biggest events in comics recently in terms of getting people talking about it. Partly because the New York Times talked about most of it prior to its release. Seb, I said this off mic, I don't really understand comics PR. I work in marketing and I don't really understand the PR that goes on around the release of big comic books. Like, why do we need to know that a character is dying like the week before they die? Or why do we need to know that a character who has been long gone is returning on the pages of Bleed It Cool rather than the pages of a Marvel comic? I just don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the time I think it is done for, you know, if a big thing happens in a comic that is not otherwise trailed as happening in that comic, then obviously I can see why, even though it ruins it for those of us who would have bought it anyway, I can see why they would want to say, look, people, you need to go out and buy this important comic.
But can't they do like a next week on Lost thing? Lost used to go like, next week on Lost, one of these characters will die.
Oh, and but Lost nicked that from comics. Have you never seen the cover of the issue in which Gwen Stacy dies?
Yeah, but so why don't they do that? Why don't they go to the New York Times and say,
This is what I'm saying, right? I can understand trailing something when it would inspire people to pick something up where they wouldn't. With something like this, it is bizarre because
New York Times piece wasn't news.
Yeah, this issue has been built up to as the wedding issue. This was already going to sell a bucket load because it's the big landmark wedding issue. I gather that the reason why Marvel put it out to the New York Times so early was because it leaked. And so it was damage control, basically. But I think the plan was always for there to be a story on it before it came out, which is ridiculous because, you know, the whole premise of the issue is, are they going to get married or not? Now, I've never believed for a second that they were, as someone who has been reading this run from the start and knowing, seeing the shape of what this run is about, it was obvious that they weren't going to get married, as interesting a premise as it would be, and knowing already from Superman that it doesn't spoil these characters to put them in that situation, although I think with Batman and Catwoman, it's a very different situation. So I knew they weren't going to. It's still annoying to have that ruined in the press beforehand.
But then you have the reveal of the
actual last page of the issue, which is a much, much bigger... If you're actually following the story, it's irrelevant. relevant. But if you'd be following Tom King's run for the previous 49 issues, the last page of this issue is absolutely enormous. It's a complete and total game changer that undercuts and sheds fresh light on pretty much everything that's happened in the entire run since it started.
But this, again, Seb,
and
to
so
go
to give
back
that
to the...
away is just ridiculous. I mean,
I don't understand.
Well, no, I don't understand it either. I liken it to the way that you get soap storylines granted to the newspaper. They're not leaked to the newspapers. They're revealed in the newspapers by way of the production.
But that's
the channel.
That is what soap watchers want. They want to be able to buy those magazines, read about them, and then watch it happen. Comic book readers don't want this.
Are you
and
sure? Because have you seen the way people discuss it? I think, actually, comic book readers and soap opera fans are not a million miles apart, because I've got news for you. Comic books are soap operas.
Can I also pitch in something interesting? I started this little bit on the side of these spoilers were bad. What were they for? But then, actually, as Seb was talking, I realised that I today bought Batman 50. I read that coverage. And I might not have bought it if it. It's not so much that I knew information about the comic that made me want to buy it, or you know, sort of plot. But truthfully, the coverage of it got in my attention more. That comic has been in my head more this week than if that press wasn't out there. And I ended up buying the comics. So I kind of wonder if I'm an example of why they do this. Maybe right?
When I say I don't understand it, I'm aware there must be, because they do it with regularity, and it's not just the DC that does it. It's both of the major publishers. There must be a financial imperative to it, and I don't know whether just like Wednesday sales are so important, whether they're like the opening weekend of a movie. But because what you could do is you could release the issue on Monday, on the Wednesday, and then from Thursday on go on a mad press PR blitz, because all of the outlets still want to be on your side.
I think to Seb's point, that was probably what they were going to do, but it leaked out.
It's irrelevant to DC how many copies of a comic get sold in a particular week, because the comic shops have already bought them and comics are non-returnable.
I don't get it. It feels strange to me, and the idea about it leaking is to get people talking about it.
That's all it is, to get people talking about it. And here's what goes down in the Batman issue. It gets people talking about it more than here's what might happen in the Batman issue.
But TV shows and movies are able to get people talking about them before release, without giving away major plot details. I wonder why comics can't.
You're talking to me like I have an explanation for this, or I agree with it being a good thing. I'm completely with you. I think it's stupid. As a reader, it annoys me. Marvel did it a week or two ago, because Marvel had a big wedding issue coming up that had a massive... The twist in that wedding issue was so big that they had to keep secret the name of a new ongoing series, that the new ongoing X-Men series that they were launching. And the reason for that is, I think it's been out long enough that I can spoiler it for those who haven't heard, the issue of X-Men Gold was supposed to be the wedding of Kitty Pryde and Colossus. They don't go through with the wedding, but instead Rogue and Gambit spontaneously decide to get married, and the new series that's launching is Mr. and Mrs. X, and is a Rogue and Gambit ongoing. And what Marvel did was, they held the announcement of that until after they had announced... The idea, I think, was to hold the announcement until after the issue had come out, and then they'd go, hey, this is what this is. What actually happened was they announced before the issue came out that Rogue and Gambit were getting married and that Kitty and Colossus weren't. So they just can't help... These both companies can't help just shooting themselves in the foot with this stuff. I don't understand it.
So that's what what I'm saying is, what my point is, I don't understand this. I'm not sure they are shooting themselves in the foot. I'm sure there is a good reason for doing it. I would love to read the interview with whoever from either DC or Marvel that goes into detail about why this is a good thing that's worth doing.
But it's worth noting that Tom King has been very publicly not happy about this on Twitter. I mean, he hasn't come out and said this shouldn't have been done. But if you read between the lines of how he's talked about it on Twitter, he's evidently not happy about it. But I think that comes back to, it was leaked before it went properly public.
I also, so two things. One, I mean, whether knowing what happened affects the quality of the issue. I knew what happened, including that last page and its context. Having not read any of the other run, I read Batman at 50 and I loved it. So, you know, take that for the.
It's a very good issue if you like and get on with what Tom King has been doing really well in this run, which is writing the characters well. Doing this thing of coming at it, because the way the issue is structured is it jumps between scenes that are people getting ready for the wedding and letters from Batman and Catwoman to each other are kind of on alternating pages, and the letters are done as captions over pinup art by a wide range of artists, including Frank Miller's in there. Tim Sale is back, but Tim Sale's one isn't very good.
Paul Pope.
Paul Pope's in there. Becky Cloonan one is fantastic. Yeah. Amanda Connor, brilliant. There's Neil Adams one. Actually, it's one of the better things I've seen from Neil Adams. The art is great throughout, apart from the Tim Sale one, which is really disappointing.
And it's weird because it's not
Kirky one as well.
It's not one image, is it? It's like he's done a page of comics.
He's got,
it's weird.
Yeah. Multiple anyway. Panels, and it also runs through the kind of different Batman and Catwoman costumes, like they're all from kind of different eras. So
I did think
that
was a weird page. Yeah.
Reese, if you like that alternating narration thing, when you get to it, you'll love the Superman two-parter, which is just one of the best things I've read with either of those characters in for a very long time.
Okay.
So yeah, in terms of nailing the character stuff, there's a lovely page with Bruce and Alfred that's just... Alfred's been
almost
the best thing about
reading
Tom
that.
King's run. Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
But, you know, it's a really good issue. I'm glad you read it and enjoyed it. I think some people were a bit disappointed with it because of how things played out after what had been built up to, but I think it totally makes sense in the context of what's going on. And as I say, you know, what I think Tom King's run is about overall and will ultimately turn out to be about, this is an obvious step in that process, basically. So it delivered kind of what I expected out of it.
Well,
and I had already had the big twist spoiled, and I don't mean the not getting married twist. I don't even think we'll talk about that one, because if anyone is still going to read it or is going to read Tom King's run from the start, then I mean, this is very much this is the halfway point of the run, Tom King has said, and this is very much the boom, end of season, cliffhanger, is all I'll say.
Yeah.
I also want to say that, just to, real quick, Joe, what you were saying before about kind of comparing comic press and comic fandom to TVs, to movies, I feel like I learned a long time ago that it's, for whatever reason, it's not the same, that the analogs are not the same, that there's basically weird stuff that drives comic book. And I mean sort of, you know, buyers of the Wednesday comics, you know, the kind of the reason that those people are in those stores buying those comics or on their iPads buying stuff. It doesn't seem to be quite the same way as people showing up for Hollywood or, you know, maybe it's just that the audience is niche, you know, so if a movie's a big hit, it's appealed to everybody. Whereas if comics are big hit, they've appealed to somebody way, way more specific, and they've appealed to those people in way more specific ways. I don't have a good point on this, but I think the sort of TV analog isn't quite right.
Yeah, I for me it's just I'm seeking to understand. I know it must be happening for a reason, but I'm obviously not close enough to comics or not close enough to the economics of comics to understand how it works. Because even the leak thing doesn't really make sense to me. Like, it was leaked, but then the New York Times piece that went out originally went out with all of the details apart from the last twist. So why, if you know it's been leaked, why not just give the New York Times everything rather than just the majority? It's very interesting. I can't pretend to understand it.
The only other thing I just want to say, by the way, from a general point of view of the quality of comics, is spinning out of this, also launched this week, was a new Catwoman ongoing series written and drawn by Joelle Jones, who's been drawing quite a lot of issues of the Tom King run, usually Catwoman-centric issues. Joelle Jones is absolutely fantastic. She's wonderful as an artist. Like, I legitimately think she's one of the absolute best artists working in comics at the moment. And based on the evidence of Catwoman 1, she can write as well. So that's really worth picking up, but has been one of the better things to come out of this run as well. So, and also, as soon as they announced that there was going to be a Catwoman solo ongoing, I was like, oh, well, that means they're not getting married then. And sure enough.
Hey, that was Comics Corner, you guys. We move on now to our final section, which is the pitch. And we have two pitches that we need to do this week. The first one is going to be Seb versus Reese. And the second one is going to be Seb versus Andrew Ellard, who has sent in his pitch from last week's episode. And so Seb's going to have to go up against that. The first one, you guys, from back on our Men in Black episode, which neither of you were on, is, I think I, Seb, you were telling me you went back and listened to what I actually said the first time. I wrongly quoted myself on the Batman Forever episode. I want is a comic book movie based on a comic book that I've never heard of. Anything. So, Seb, you can go first, and then we'll give Reese a chance to think of any old nonsense.
Well, tell you what, I'm going to do it by the premise that you wrongly did it as, and which is a much narrower and more limiting premise that you said it as at the end of the Batman Forever episode. And I'm going to pitch a movie based on a comic that you didn't know was a Marvel comic. Although if it turns out that you did know about it, then it's scuppered. I would like to see a movie of Bill and Ted's Excellent Comic Book.
I had no idea. I'm excited. Tell me more.
So, when Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey came out, Marvel Great Comics movie. Published an adaptation of it, written and drawn by Evan Dorkin, who's most famous kind of as an underground cartoonist and known for a series called Milk and Cheese, among other things. He wrote a fantastic thing called Beasts of Burden more recently, a few years ago. In and of itself, the Bogus Journey adaptation is great. It's actually based on like an earlier version of the script than got filmed, so there's scenes in it that never made it to the film. But then he carried that on into I think it's a 12-issue ongoing series called Bill and Ted's Excellent Comic Book. And it was just great. It really, it nailed the spirit of the films with kind of a bit of the cartoon series thrown in as well. But, you know, Death is a recurring character in it. But then, like, characters from the first films, like Abraham Lincoln and Socrates and Joan of Arc and stuff all pop up. And it's
so
just
great.
Yeah, so great. And it's just this fun, freewheeling, ludicrous, over-the-top ideas. Denomalous turns up again towards the end as well. It gets really weird towards the end. But it's great. And it actually got republished recently, not by Marvel, because Boom Studios picked up the rights to do new Bill and Ted comics. And along with that, they got the rights to republish the old Marvel stuff. So they've reprinted it in a lovely hardback edition that I'm holding right now. It's also the first time it's been reprinted in colour, because there was an earlier collection that I've got that's in black and white. And it's just great. And it's just, you know, obviously we know there is going to be a Bill and Ted 3. Which I think is going to be great. From everything I've heard about it, I really think it's good, but I would quite like to see some of the stuff that Evan Dorkin did in that Marvel comic turned into a film. And it was really just me trying to think of something that you didn't know was a Marvel comic, which I think I've succeeded at.
Yeah, you definitely succeeded in that criteria. Reese, are you going to fall at the first hurdle?
Okay, no. During that, listen, Seb, I'm sure what you just said was really great and interesting. During that period, I walked over to my like little comic corner in my room.
I'd love it if you picked the same thing as me.
No, I heard vaguely what you're talking about. I was just looking for comics that maybe Joe would know. And I have one. I mean, there's only one here, I think, that would count. But I think it would make a good TV show, if that's all right.
Sure, that's fine.
Okay, it's Seb, do you know, it's a comic called Zero, written by Alice Cott.
I have not read it. I've heard of it.
It's from Image. I only have the first two volumes. I haven't really read the whole thing. But I remember thinking it was amazing when I read it. It's a bit like, it sort of starts as a James Bond kind of analog, but then and each issue has a very very different, very diverse art style, and also each issue sort of jumps around in time a bit, but is a specific mission from this James Bond type sort of spy. But then you zip back to him as a kid and him in training, and you kind of zip forward to him as an old man. And then about midway through the second volume of this comic, you know, because there's sort of, you know, generic-y James Bondy spy storylines that are going through. And then in the second volume, it gets a bit Cthulhu-y. It gets a bit like Alien Invasion Cthulhu-y, but in a way that is quite philosophical in a way. And I think it would make a really good TV show. You'd, you know, every episode, because again, because there's a different artist for every issue. Every issue is very stylistically distinct. So you could do a show where every episode is telling us, a bit like Atlanta in some ways. Every episode was telling a specific kind of mission for this guy, but from different parts of his career, and would be stylistically different to the others. And as you go along, as the season progresses, it sort of some weirdness kind of creeps in, and it all gets a bit Cthulhu-y. And I think it would make a good show. Boom.
Very interesting. I'm going to withhold my judgment until we've done the second pitch. Guys, I'm going to play you Andrew's pitch so you can listen to it now. And obviously we'll input it in actual high quality for our listeners to listen to. So this is the pitch that Andrew sent in. And what I wanted was a Batman movie with a year in the title. It could be any year. It could be Batman 1066 or 2932. Let's see what Andrew came up with.
My pitch is for Batman 1222, which immediately when Joe mentioned, you've got to put a year in the title, it reminded me of a comic I read ages ago called Batman Dark Knight Dynasty, which is, it actually takes place over three different time frames. So there's a past, present and future version of Batman in some form. So he's Sir Joshua Wainwright in the past, in a medieval past, 1222. The regular Batman in the present, and then there's a dark future version in the year 2500. And I wouldn't want to do that time jumpy story, be switching protagonists, although there's a certain sort of Assassin's Creed-y quality to doing that. But a medieval Batman, for some reason, continues to appeal to me. So the only thing I'm nicking really from the comics is that first third with this gorgeous artwork of a knighted bat-symboled Batman in armour. There's something that really worked about that in the imagery of the comic, which is worth tracking down for that, rather than actually the story, which is kind of a bit... It's about a guy called Vandal Savage who tries to get hold of gold, and he's got a thing about immortality and a meteor that's going to impact the Earth. And anyway, so instead, looking for a villain for that kind of story, and actually most of Batman's villains don't adapt to the medieval era particularly well, because they're mostly created by things like mad science, and actually it doesn't feel like that. That's much more of a sort of Victorian idea. But actually I thought you might be able to take Killer Croc, which is supposed to be something that began as a disease. And if you're looking at that kind of period, you can at least have things like plague superstition and stuff going on. So actually the idea that Killer Croc's been created, and it's essentially a George and the Dragon image at that point, where you've got a knighted Batman in armour and a green lizard creature, something like that. So I don't know where it goes. I have no plot for it because, well, we were doing the podcast for Batman Forever and plot didn't seem utmost in my mind. But that's my pitch. Batman 1222.
Seb, you essentially, what you have there, you have a man who works on scripts professionally to come up against. And that sounded like, even though he hadn't fleshed out the plot for it, sounded pretty compelling visually. A medieval Batman fighting a plague-ridden Killer Croc. I'm on board on paper.
I'm going to say Batman 1976. The 1970s were a really good time for Batman comics. It was kind of when they pulled back after the excesses of the 60s, which are, well, 50s more, but 50s and 60s, which are great in their own way, but had got a bit... By the time the Batman TV show came along, the comics had been doing the silly stuff for quite a while longer, and they were quite moribund by the end of the 60s. The 70s was where they kind of got reinvented as the kind of... very much street level Gotham detective thriller type stuff. And it's also where you got the introduction of like Ra's al Ghul and stuff like that. You had the Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams, later in the decade, the Steve Englehart and Marshall Rogers stuff. And Batman just fits really well, and I think hasn't really been done yet in movies as that really kind of stripped back, simple, here's a guy kind of fighting the tide down on the streets in Gotham, driving a Batmobile that is literally just like a blue car, you know. And I just think that could be combined with the style of mid to late 1970s, you know, kind of Scorsese, All the President's Men, that type of movie, to create that feel of a kind of gritty but intriguing 70s detective drama with Batman at the center of it.
Reese, was that what you were going to pitch?
Yes. No, of course not. No. I love that Sev thought it could have been. No. Okay. It's just.
Well, because you're a movie guy, Reese. I would have thought you would look to movies and try and place Batman in the context of movies.
Here's what I'm going in. Here's my idea. It's maybe it's because I mean, just talked about Zero, which is all about like American Army, CIA, whatever, that sort of stuff. Batman 2003, and basically, it'd be like an updated.
Which, I mean, given that we've just been talking about the current run of Batman written by former counterterrorism CIA agent.
Seb, you just did that Nightfall podcast episode. Which is the one where? Which is the third one where Batman takes down Azrael? Which is the last?
Night's End is
the okay. It'd be like a Night's End sort of update. Idea would be that in September 11th in the DC universe, in this story, there's some sort of 9/11 equivalent, and then it's Nightwing who kind of goes a bit crazy and goes out to try and solve these issues, but goes a bit too far Azrael style, and then
Dick Grayson goes Dick Cheney.
No, Dick Grayson wouldn't do that. Can we make it Jason Todd?
Jason Todd, fine, sure. That Robin goes a bit too far off the deep end, and it's the story is Batman trying to, you know, sort of bring him back to the way of the correct way of the Batmanness. But it'd be like a bit of a 9/11 green zone, Zero Dark Thirty types, if you want to bring in the movies type story with Batman. But it's basically like a Batman versus Robin story set in a post 9/11 setting. There we go. Fine.
Do you know what? I liked that a lot more than I thought I was going to do when you started out. I'm not sure it would be massively politically correct, or like, I'm not sure that audiences would fully embrace the kind of the inherent concepts there.
But there's stuff in all of the Nolan Batmans, or at least the Dark Knight in particular, that's loaded with that sort of imagery, right? There's that famous shot from maybe it begins of him like sort of in the just as the dawn's coming up, of him looking across the city in destruction. That's very evocative. There's lots of very evocative 9/11 imagery stuff in those movies. But also you're going to want to stay clear from that. I haven't read it, but Seb, maybe you have that Frank Miller kind of 9/11 Batman comic. What's it called, right? Holy Terror Batman? Terror.
It ended up not being a Batman comic. He pitched it for this is going to be my next chapter in my Batman stories is Batman goes and fights Al-Qaeda.
Right.
But eventually DC just wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot barge pole. So it was actually published in 2011. And it was about the character was called the Fixer instead. It's just basically about a guy going and killing a load of Islamic terrorists.
Wow. Right. I've got some difficult decisions to make. Let's start out with this one, the Batman one. Do you know what? You know, sometimes we get lots of pitches and we're like, oh, need to pick one by default. They're all pretty good, but I mean, you're going against a professional, you guys. Medieval Batman? Yes, please. So Andrew wins that pitch. And then the second pitch, I'm torn because I feel like Seb's answer is clearly pretty strong, but they're already making it. So, and also, Seb, I feel like it goes against your core values of original concepts, and Reese was pitching something fresh.
But Andrew was pitching something that's already been a thing, and yet you gave him the win there. So,
Andrew
known that was on the table, I could have pitched Gotham by Gaslight, you know.
I mean,
if it sways the win for me, Joe, I'm actually just thinking about that comic that I already pitched that I haven't finished. I've thought about it so positively that I'm going to now buy the third volume on Amazon right now, probably.
Oh, amazing!
So that's brilliant. If that's going to swing, yeah, I think it's a show.
Is it more or less than a 1 month subscription to CBS All Access?
Oh, it's probably more. It's probably more.
Seb, have you ever lost two pitches on the same episode before?
No, I know the only reason you've done this is to give the opportunity for that to happen.
Yeah, to be fair, I was hit by a bus, so I do need the victories at the moment. I do.
Listeners, that is a true thing that happened.
It's true.
Hit by a couple of bus. The elephant in the room all this episode, but Reese got hit by a bus a couple of weeks ago and lived to tell the tale. He is.
Or did Willis he? We were break. Talking about M. Night Shyamalan earlier.
Oh, that would be a great twist at the end of the episode. Reese is actually dead.
Reese was the bus.
We've just stitched together the third of the dialogue from just old episodes of Reese. He did die a week and a half ago.
This has got dark. If anyone needs to swing it. Reese got hit by a bus, so Reese wins that pitch.
Yes!
And that is it for this week's episode. Listeners, you can find all of our recent episodes. We've had lots of guests on recently. We're going to have another guest next week because it's a Pixar episode, so James will not be with us. We've had the Caroline and Andrew have both been on the last couple of episodes where we've done Men in Black and Batman Forever. Seb, you were joined by David for the Nightfall bonus episode.
Yeah, although that was actually
an old Patreon one that we've put out in the live feed. And then Caroline and I did a special July 4th Independence Day episode, which I apologise if I angered any of the hardcore fans out there because it's not based on a comic book property. But we got a few requests and we couldn't resist. So hopefully you're enjoying all of that. Lots of content out there. Lots of great content from Cinematic Universe out in the world right now. I feel like doing our bit for the comic book movie nerds in the UK who are not being given Ant-Man and the Wasp right now. At least we're doing our part. If you are enjoying the show, then please do subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, Spotify, Player FM, or your podcast app of choice. And you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/cinematicuniverse. You can find more episodes of the show at cinematicuniverse.com. You can get in touch via Facebook, on Twitter, @cine_verse, or send us an email to editorial@cinematicuniverse.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.
It's coming home.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.